Welcome to the Education Spotlight with Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. Presented by Bay Coast Bank, providing exceptional service and solutions for our community. And One South Coast Chamber, right here on FM 95.9, AM 1480 WSAR.
Hi, I'm Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. We're happy to bring the Education Spotlight to you today, sponsored by Bay Coast Bank. We have as our guest Elena Marcotte, who is the Financial Aid Director at Bristol Community College. Welcome, Elena.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me today.
So my first question when it comes to financial aid is, what brought you to financial aid? How does one's career lead you to financial aid?
That's a good question. I don't know many people that grow up saying, I want to be in financial aid when I grow up. So actually, I was going to college for teaching over at Rhode Island College. I thought I always wanted to be a teacher, carried a part-time job in banking. And about halfway through my college career, I was like, you know what? I don't think I really like this very much. I think I'd like to do something different. And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I had always been in business. So I switched to a business degree and happened to have a colleague of mine that worked for a Lincoln Technical Institute. And a job had opened up in financial aid, and she said, you know what, I think you'd be really great at this. Why don't you come and give it a shot? And that was in, 2010. So the rest is history. I just kind of stayed in it.
It's interesting how those things happen. I so many people who go to college and, and they have this whole plan in mind. They get there, they start to roll through it, and then they say, wait a minute. No, this is not what I want to do.
Sure.
This is not definitely not what I want to do. But I never, other than when my kids were going to school, I don't know that I've ever actually really met with or worked with many people that are in the financial aid field. And I do have a lot of interaction with higher education institutions, but you don't see the financial aid folks out there too often.
Yeah, I think historically speaking, they kind of seem like those mysterious creatures that live in the back of the college building that kind of are scary to approach. But one of my biggest goals when I took the job at Bristol in May of 2020 and the height of COVID really was making sure that at Bristol, financial aid was an approachable place, a friendly place that people knew where we were and knew how to access us and that we were here to help. So, I think historically speaking, it has been, depending on which colleges you're kind of looking at for yourself or your children or friends, financial aid isn't always the most approachable office. They're very transactional. But at Bristol, we've definitely done a lot of work to change that.
Yeah, I've seen, my youngest son is 28. So it's been... He's out of college now 10 years. So it's like 10, 11 years since I last dealt with, financial aid and trying to work through the FAFSA and all that kind of stuff. And I have to tell you, I don't miss it. It's probably one of the things I'd rather do my taxes than do my FAFSA. But I think one of the things that's changed dramatically, and I'm not sure if it's something that's changed like over 10 years or if it's this region, because it seems to me like this region is very, very aggressive about trying to make sure that students understand that they can go to school and that the finances don't have to be a barrier. That there's ways to deal with it. You can, there's grants, there's loans, there's all sorts of, there's just, you really need to plan it, it seems to me to be the best way to look at it. Because even when my guys were looking at school, the one thing I saw, like we started looking when they were, I started looking with the last one we looked when they were younger. But my daughter really didn't start paint really, really focusing till probably the end of her sophomore year. But we should have started sooner because there are things that, you know, the look back on your taxes and your income and all those things, by the time you start looking at it and trying to pay attention to it, it's already too late to change anything if you want to change anything. And I know a lot of families who have the spouse may not have worked, but then they say, oh, I have to go to work to pay for college. And they do that, and then it ends up where they get less financial aid. So there's a lot of things to learn, which is why we're really glad that you're here to talk about all this stuff. And I think, you know, when Dr. Douglas approached the two of us about you coming on, I thought it was great because I think it's just another indication how Bristol wants to get the word out. So.
Yeah, we do a lot of work. We go into our high schools a lot. People from my office follow the admissions team, and this has happened yearly anyways, but we've really pushed to make more events, more outreach, more communications, be more accessible, you know, starting off even in high school. Take, for instance, I would say, when was it? Maybe about 2 months ago, myself and the associate director went and presented to our TRIO program.
I heard the TRIO program, somebody mentioned it. I was at an event at Bristol on Tuesday, a DEI event on Tuesday, and I asked the question, they answered it, and now I don't remember what it is. But what is TRIO?
So it's grant-funded. Now, Dr. Daryl Henry would be the perfect person to talk to because he's the head of TRIO over our school, but it really focuses on first-gen students and students that are high need, and it starts them off at a very young age. I mean, they're starting with students in middle school in some of these programs and helping follow up, you know, all the way through high school. So the students that I was speaking to were over at Durfee High School, And I was presenting to them on what the FAFSA is, the timelines, how you do these things, what you'll need in advance, kind of getting them prepared. And then with questions, who can you contact over at our area? You know, because we're always here to help. So I think that part of it is just putting a face to a name and showing that you're there and you're available to do these things. But it's been a very huge initiative with Bristol, and I know through the state too, to make sure that the college is accessible for everybody in the community. So,
I met Daryl. Yeah. He was actually, when we were talking, and he told me what he does at the college, I asked him, I had to say, what is TRIO? But now I'm usually the second time you tell me something, I don't forget. I usually remember the first, and then the second time I really won't forget. So Elena, when you go into the schools, like when you went to Durfee, what do you see is the student's biggest concern with the whole concept of college and paying for it?
So I think that the misconception that a lot of students and families have is that they're not going to qualify for anything. Maybe they feel like the family makes too much money, or they're afraid students that need their parents' information, they're afraid their parents aren't going to offer it up easily. There's just that fear that the information is going to be used for various things, maybe even outside of financial aid. You know, you start thinking about the new tuition equity law for undocumented students and being very nervous and apprehensive to come forward and provide this information because they're afraid that it will spotlight them, even though it's a great initiative. So it's not knowing what they need, you know, afraid that their parents are not going to cooperate to make it happen. And then even if you jump through all those steps, that you're not going to get anything. And I think that's just a huge misconception now, especially with all of the new state funds that have come out this past year.
Right.
A lot of them are not necessarily need-based. The families don't have to be those highest need populations to still receive state funding, especially. So I think it's really just about demystifying the whole process. It seems like such an arduous and lengthy thing, But really, if you were to sit down with someone and have us walk you through it once, you know, I just did a FAFSA with someone earlier today that walked into the office and we were done in under 10 minutes. So really? It's not as bad as it seems. You just need the right people to help you.
Well, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Education Spotlight with Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. Presented by Bay Coast Bank, providing exceptional service and solutions for our community, and One South Coast Chamber.
Welcome back. This is Mike O'Sullivan with One South Coast Chamber, and I'm joined today by Elena Marcotte, the Director of Financial Aid from Bristol Community College. We're having a great conversation about some of the trials and tribulations of financial aid and how students and families can actually find ways to pay for college, which is exciting. Before the break, you had just mentioned a tuition equity program. Can you tell us a little more about that, a little more detail?
Yes, absolutely. So the Tuition Equity Program is a new program that was passed as of July 1st, 2023. And what the goal of that law is to provide students who are otherwise considered undocumented students but have lived in the state of Massachusetts and attended Massachusetts High School for 3 years and gained a high school credential from the state of Massachusetts, it opens up the doors to state aid for students. So historically speaking, you could have a family that's lived here since a student was a child and hasn't been able to complete the appropriate citizenship documentation. So they get all the way through high school, they graduate, and then they can't obtain any financial aid because they don't have the credentials to do so. So they're forced to pay out of pocket or find ways to support themselves to get through college if they want to, you know, extend their education and get into the workforce. So what the tuition equity law does is, I like to refer to it as a high school completer, because it's really looking at, have you lived in the state of Massachusetts? Have you gone to high school and earned a high school credential? If the answer to that is yes, and you plan on staying in the United States, the state has opened up a application that's called the Massachusetts Application for Student Financial Aid. And it's pretty much like the FAFSA, but it's separate just for state. And students and families can go on and fill that out. And it does the same type of calculations that a FAFSA would. And it looks for what state programs, state grants, a student would be eligible for. And it allows them to access that. So it's a brand new program this year. I'm still working out some of the kinks of it through the state. You know, there's a lot of changes this year and going into next year. But you know, they're really looking to, the state has committed to a great DEI model. They want to make education accessible to everybody. So this is an attempt to capture that population.
That's great. When you made reference not to a high school diploma, but a high school credential.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
So like a GED.
Okay.
Yeah.
I kind of thought that, but I thought I should ask ask that question, because it can be, you know, especially to parents, it can be confusing.
Sure.
What that difference is. So when you go into the schools and the kids are concerned about paying for it, what are some of the other, or being able to pay for it, what are some of the other challenges that you hear from the students?
I think just setting up. So the very first thing that a student and parent needs to do to be able to step through this process is to set up a username and password for FAFSA and everything related to that. And that's a challenge. A lot of them don't even know their social security numbers. You know, so even having, you know, I think about, I have a son that's about to turn 16. If you asked him what his social security number is, he wouldn't know it. I had to explain to him what it was. So, you know, I think the lack of knowledge even about the basics of things that you're going to be asked, even to get a job sometimes,
right.
That's a challenge, you know, just kind of not having the preparation to walk through that process. And then a lot of them, you know, this is why we go in with admissions the challenge of, I don't know what I want to go to school for. I don't know what track I'm going to be on. I don't know if I want a certificate or an associate's degree or a bachelor's or a master's. Just, you know, the direction of where they want to go in their life. Because when you're young and you're in high school, kids aren't thinking about that a lot of times.
Yeah, you just don't know.
Right.
Yeah. But that's interesting. Because kids, they really, you know, they go through a lot of change. And families don't realize. I mean, I remember the first time I ever did the FAFSA. And, of course, that was probably closer to 18, 19 years ago. So it's changed a lot. But I remember the first time doing the FAFSA, when you go through the username and the password, and you don't even realize that you, at that moment in time, that like this is a name and a number that you're going to need for basically forever, or at least depending on your, you know, the separation of your kids' ages, you might need it for at least like 15 years, and you forget that, and then because you forget it, and then life gets, I remember life getting pretty crazy just dealing with that. And it wasn't, you know, it was a hassle.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be. I think that they've kind of built some steps in along the way, like some security questions. If you forget your password, that kind of reminds you or helps you reset it. But yeah. And, you know, it truly is your electronic signature. So what that username and password is it's confirming, they confirm your information with the Social Security Administration to say, yes, I am this person, because everything's electronic now.
Right.
So the FAFSA is signed electronically. If students take out loans or parents take out loans, you're using that username and password to do all of that. So, you know, there's some security measures in place. And, you know, we joke around about government websites and passwords, but of course they want a special character. It has to be 16 characters long. You need some uppercase and lowercase, and it can't look like a word, and you can't use something sentimental that you might remember. So yeah, definitely write it down. If you're someone who uses your cell phone and has like a notes app, I would suggest putting it in there.
Yeah, that's a good idea, sticking it in your notes app or writing it down and keeping it away from the computer you normally use, but just so you know, but make sure you have access to it. So, you know, Bristol's had great growth in the last year or so. From what I hear from Dr. Douglas and I hear from some of the deans, you know, tell me, a lot of it has to do with Reconnect, but tell me how you work with the Reconnect program. And because initially it would seem to me like you don't interact with it very much, and on the surface of it, and I may be wrong, I don't know, but it would just seem like that because it's supposed to be free college for people over 25, you know, with certain documentation.
Yes. So Reconnect is kind of like my baby. that was a huge focus of mine leading into this school year. You know, we kind of had an idea it was going to come, just wasn't, you know, we weren't quite sure at the time how it was going to be implemented. But yeah, Reconnect makes sure that Mass residents that don't already have an associate's degree or higher can get their associate's degree and some, you know, without having to pay for any tuition and fees, and they get a book stipend as well. I think the confusion that comes with that sometimes is that it's a last in dollar. So what that means is you have to complete the FAFSA first, utilize any other free federal grant funds that you would qualify for, and then Reconnect kicks in after if there's any remaining need left over that hasn't been covered. The goal is that, you know, students shouldn't need to take out any loans or pay out of pocket for their courses. You know, and what we're finding is just driving that population of students to complete their FAFSA to qualify for this, about two-thirds of them don't even need it because by the time they fill out their FAFSA and we get them all their other federal grant funds and other state funds they qualify for, they're already 100% covered.
Wow.
So, you know, it's very eye-opening to see just how much is available to students, even pre-reconnect, you know. But a lot of people go under that misconception that they're not going to qualify for anything, so they don't fill out the application. And it's just money left there on the table that they could have had to help them. So it's been a great initiative. We've seen just huge growth, a lot of interest. And the average age of the Bristol student is 25. So, you know, it is the demographic of students that's a large population of Bristol students that come. So it's been great. It's been really great to see.
Before Reconnect, what was the average age of the Bristol student?
I think it was pretty close to that. Yeah, we have a good mix. That's what I love about Bristol. We've got high school students. We've got, you know, students in their 20s. But I see students walking around that they're retired and they're coming back to school. You know, it's a beautiful campus. There's lots of programs. It's just, it's a wonderful atmosphere to be around. And I think that's what drives a lot of the community members to Bristol, because there's just a lot to offer.
Well, it's great that you're making people aware and they're understanding, because it's, you know, in the business world, we see it sometimes. You could have a grant that's out there and all people need to do is just put their name on the application and maybe have one or two really, really, really simple criteria. We're talking real simple criteria, and people won't sign it. They won't go for it. It's crazy.
Right.
It's crazy. But we're going to take our second break, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Education Spotlight with Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. Presented by Bay Coast Bank, providing exceptional service and solutions for our community, and One South Coast Chamber.
I'm Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber, and I'm happy to be joined today by Elena Marcotte, the Director of Financial Aid for Bristol Community College. So during the break, we were talking a little bit about some of the programs and, you know, the majors, the schools, you know, where you're seeing competitiveness and just an interest in applications and applications for aid.
So we see a lot of students that come in through our general studies programs, because we have a lot of concentrations for general studies. There's general studies health and life sciences, general studies business. So, you know, students kind of dipping their toes in, going through the general studies path. But there is a high demand for the selective health programs. They're very competitive. So the nursing program, dental hygiene program, we have a lot of applicants that are interested in those programs. And the state of Massachusetts came out with a nursing scholarship this year that's kind of like Reconnect, but for nursing students. So, you know, we've had some uptick there as well. And then, of course, the computer information systems, you know, in the world of AI and all sorts of technology, that's always going to be a track that students are interested in as well.
AI is a really big track, and you had mentioned during the break how you have some of the agreements so that students can go on to get a four-year degree. I recently was up at Bridgewater, and I was amazed at the cybersecurity program that they have, and the setup of it, the whole structure of it was just, it was like you would think you were going into NASA, or something like that. I mean, they really, really did a great job with that particular program, and now it's a really highly sought after cybersecurity program, which people hear cybersecurity, and I don't think they really understand how crazy important cybersecurity is, but they also don't understand how crazy AI is getting in the real world.
Right.
Yeah.
And it continues to grow too. And I think that you'll see more and more programs surrounding AI as it emerges, you know, because now we're just trying to keep up with that keep up with the technology. It just grows at such a high pace, and you know, and there's a lot of interest in it. It can be used for some really amazing things, but you know, like anything, there's good and bad to it too. So you have to be prepared to have your stuff safeguarded for AI related stuff as well. So.
Yeah, you really do. You really do, because AI, you know, AI is available to, you know, the people that we need cybersecurity to prevent, and you know, so it can be a little crazy. I want to go back to nursing for a moment, because you talked a little bit about nursing and the competitiveness of nursing, but nursing is an area where there's a great need for jobs.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the nursing program and the kind of, I know you said it's competitive.
It is competitive, yes. It's a very rigorous program. I mean, anything in the medical field, you know, they have some pretty high criteria to make sure that you're going to be successful in the program. It's a very structured program, so they go in through cohorts, unlike some of the other, you know, traditional four-year schools have a lot more structured cohorts than community college does, but for selective health programs like nursing and dental hygiene, you are in a cohort and you're following the same track, taking the same classes the whole way through. So, you know, because there's such a shortage of nurses, the state had put forward the nursing scholarship this year, which truly is like Mass Reconnect, but for nursing students, it's not age restricted. It's just you're required to be a Massachusetts resident and not have a prior degree. And if you're in the nursing program, it's going to cover any last in dollars that you haven't received in other grant aid, and then give some additional funds for books and supplies as well. So, you know, they're trying to incentivize students that are interested in the healthcare field to come through and not incur the cost, because nursing usually does have some higher fees associated with it. You know, you have a lot of extra supplies, the stethoscope, the scrubs, all of the tool kits and stuff. So, you know, that can intimidate some people, thinking they can't afford to go to school for the nursing field. But this program really does help offset those costs.
But it can be a great rewarding field.
Absolutely.
My wife is a nurse, and so I see that every day. And you know, just the being able to deal with the patients and the people, and you know, she loves that part of it. She's been in administration, she's been in you know, patient care. She recently went back to patient care because she likes it better.
Yeah, it's more fun than paperwork, I'd suppose.
Yeah, you can say that again. You can say that again. But I think it's great that. You know, that the state has created that program for nursing specific, and it's not age, it's not connected to the age. Because nursing is just, I mean, it's so important, and there's so many challenges. When you talk to the leadership at St. Anne's and Charlton Hospital and St. Luke's Hospital, and you talk to the leadership, the struggle right now is real for nurses. And it's not just in the hospitals. It's in nursing homes. It's in assisted living facilities. So any money you can get for those kids to get into those programs is greatly appreciated. So what are some of the other majors that you're seeing popularity in, or what are some areas that maybe there's money available that kids aren't necessarily taking advantage of?
I mean, I think the sky's the limit in terms of money being available if you're a Mass resident. It's a great time to be a student. We say that all the time at Bristol. It is a great time to be a student, just because there's just so many funds available. Really, it's a degree-seeking program. If you're going for a degree-seeking program, it's there. You know, the opportunity is there. The one and only requirement that they require, you know, that the starting point is the FAFSA. And the nice part about Bristol, which I can honestly say a lot of other schools don't do, because I've worked at other institutions, is we take appointments all day long, all week, helping people do FAFSAs. You know, the prior institution that I worked at, families and students had to do it on their own. There wasn't that assistance there. But here, you know, we take appointments, we take walk-ins, we do events that are strictly geared towards that. So we will make sure that you're walked through start to finish. And that's really where the responsibility mostly ends for students and families. The rest is on me in my area to see, you know, we're the ones that go looking to see what we can help offset the cost with. So,
as you mentioned events, I hope I'm remembering this correctly, but I think I heard Dr. Douglas recently say that you actually have evening events, mm-hmm. where you provide pizza for the families so the kids can come and eat and while the parents and the student work with you on the FAFSA. How successful have those events been?
So we just did one. It was called the FAFSA Bowl. And it was the day before the Super Bowl. It was a Saturday, so that one wasn't an evening one. My department specifically put that on. Yep, we had pizza, prizes. We did a laptop giveaway even for a raffle prize. And we have an excellent student and family engagement team at Bristol. And they, you know, they had all sorts of fun games set up and could take pictures with our Bayhawk. And we completed about 50 FAFSAs that day with families. Wow. So, you know, coming out of post-COVID, doing those on-campus events, they were slow to start up, but they're really starting to get some momentum again now that people are more comfortable and getting used to doing face-to-face things now. We do virtual stuff as well, but yeah, all through the summer, we partner with other areas of the college, admissions, career services, advising. We'll do open houses, registration events, all leading up to the starts of the semesters to make sure that, you know, we're accessible. Because not everybody can get to campus 8 to 4 Monday through Friday.
Right.
You need to be able to accommodate the working citizens or people that have families that just can't make it there in time. So they need a weekend or evening event to do that.
It was the fast football that Dr. Douglas had told me about. I remember hearing about it beforehand, and then I remember her telling me that it had great success, which was exciting. I think anything that you can do to bring the folks together. And you're right that, I mean, we're seeing it in the business community. We're seeing it so much more now. Attendance at events is getting better and better and better. But it's sort of been a slow ramp up. You might have one where all of a sudden you get a very large amount of people, but there's usually a specific reason for that. But it seems like they're consistently getting better and better and better. But I'm glad to hear that you're seeing the same thing, because we need these families to fill these out. Because as you said, it's a great time to be a student, and because there's money available.
Yes, absolutely. We have a great marketing team that's helping spread the word. A lot of times it's just because people don't know about it. So it's, you know, making sure that we get it out there enough in advance and on all the channels that people are focusing on, social media and, you know, through other newsletters. And I like to make my events fun. I know financial aid is typically not fun, but any way I can spruce it up to make it fun, I will. So that FAFSA Bowl, we were all dressed up. You know, we told everyone to come in their favorite sports attire. And, you know, me, unpopular opinion, I'm a Steelers fan. So, you know, I was there in my black and yellow, the mismatch out of the blue and reds and the Patriots fans. But it was a really great time for the students and the families.
So. That's all right. If I was there, I would have been in my Eagles. In my
there
Eagles.
We go.
Yep. Yep. It's not. It's the world. As much as it revolves around here, around the Patriots, the world doesn't always revolve around the Patriots. Of course, people are struggling with that idea right now.
Sure.
But the Steelers have a lot going on as well in their quarterbacking, but that's a topic for another day. What am I not asking you? Because financial aid's a tough topic.
Sure.
Obviously you know a lot about it. So what am I not asking you that I should be asking you?
So I think the major topics that you'll read in headlines right now is the delays with FAFSA. Anyone who hasn't been following it, the U.S. Department of Education is overhauling the FAFSA for the first time in about 40 years. And the reasons that they're doing it are excellent reasons, but any time you're overhauling something that's been in existence for such a long time, there, you know, there's a lot of hiccups along the way. So typically, FAFSA's open October 1st. So if we're thinking about like this upcoming fall of 2024, it should have opened October 1st of 2023. Well, it didn't open until December 31st.
Wow.
So there's been some delays because the application itself has changed. And then on top of that, the way that the federal Pell Grant, which is the most popular grant that you'll hear about, that the way that it's being calculated is also changing. And the purpose behind it is to really reach more of the population because they're looking at demographic poverty levels. You know, each region has different poverty levels. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? You know, a poverty level in New England might not be the same as a poverty level in, let's say, Texas. So they're really making it more relevant to the student's area and trying to expand accessibility to the Pell Grant. All that being said, what it really means for families is things are delayed this year. So students that are going into those competitive four-year schools that are waiting to shop around what they're going to get in financial aid, those letters aren't out now, and typically they would be, because schools are just starting to receive the FAFSA forms that families filled out, you know, as starting in December. Well, normally we would have been receiving them long before that, and now that we're receiving them, we still can't truly complete their financial aid awards because the Pell Grant has changed so much, and the U.S. Department of Education is working on it still. So families, keep in mind, if you're filling out these FAFSAs now, I would guess that a true financial aid award letter you won't receive until sometime in May, which traditionally speaking, you're going to get them. Like last year, I think we sent them out sometime in February or March. So there's a big delay. There's a lot of changes. It's not smooth this year. We're trying our very, very best. But that's the true topic of conversation, really, everywhere.
A lot of four-year schools, the decision's due May 1st, isn't it?
Yes. And so they're struggling because you can't expect a family to deposit without knowing what they're going to qualify for.
Right.
So, you know, four-year schools, I think they're having to accommodate that. Now, a lot of the four-year schools and private schools have some really heavy institutional funding that they can use to kind of play around mm-hmm. with. State and community schools, they're usually using most state and federal aid and don't have as many institutional dollars. Not that they have none, but they're typically not needed because the cost is so low. Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough. I mean, the government and IT don't really work very well together.
They do not. I wish they did. It would make it smoother, but yeah, you're right.
You would think with billions of dollars they'd be able to figure it out, but they don't. So we're going to take our last break, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Education Spotlight with Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. Presented by Bay Coast Bank, providing exceptional service and solutions for our community, and One South Coast Chamber.
Today by Elena Marcotte, the Director of Financial Aid for Bristol Community College. And we're learning a lot about all things FAFSA and just financial aid in general, and how much money there actually really is available, which is exciting to hear. You have to ask for it, though. It seems to me to be the moral of the story, or you at least have to fill out your FAFSA, and then things can fall into place.
Absolutely, yes. Fill out the FAFSA and let us do the rest, pretty much. If we need something follow-up, we'll reach out to you. But, yeah, that's what we're here for. And even helping fill out the FAFSA, we're here for that, too. Yeah, it's free. It's not as scary as it seems. And for anyone that's wondering, you know, a lot of people have the misconception, well, I haven't filed my taxes yet. I can't fill it out. Well, they go by prior tax year now because they assume that, you know, your income levels haven't really changed all that much, which is if they have, don't worry about it because we'll address that too. But so for the 24-25 FAFSA, students that are entering into college in the fall of 2024, that's going off the 2022 tax year. So it should be available to you.
Yeah, you should have that information, and that kind of goes back to what I was saying in the very beginning. Families don't realize that how early their financial information matters to when they're going through this process, when they're actually going to take advantage of it.
Right.
And that's that's a family decision, obviously. But I know some people who. They're in the situation where, you know, the spouse doesn't necessarily have to work, but then they say, well, we're going to have this college bill, I'll go to work. And then when they go to work and then they find out, they look at financial aid and they say, wait a minute, why did I go to work?
Yeah, it can be a delicate balancing act. I will say the nice part about this new FAFSA application is it pre-fills all of your financial information for you. So, you know, in the past, you'd have to bring in your taxes and find what line to report for the number. You're laughing because I think that you recall, right?
I remember those days.
Yeah. So, and it can be very tricky. We, you know, we joke over in financial aid that we have to be IRS people, too, to learn how to read taxes to be able to fill that information out right. But now, this year, they have something called FTI. And as long as you're giving consent for them to pull it, it pre-fills everything for you. So that's why it's so quick.
I've heard people say in prior years, I've heard people in like January that have their kids have applied, and if they applied early admission or, you know, they knew where they got in, and they would know, sometimes they know before they got the letter how much money they're going to get before they even got accepted. And I said, how do you know that? And they said, I don't know, just fill out the FAFSA, it's all electronic. You go in, you do, it takes care of all this, and you find out really quickly. And maybe I was born too early, I don't know, because it didn't work that way.
Yeah, it does give you some information on the federal Pell Grant once you fill out the FAFSA form. That being said, it's assuming that you're a full-time student, and the federal Pell Grant is actually based on your enrollment intensity, how many credits you're in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let the experts handle the award letter. That being said, it's delayed this year, so give us a little bit more time and we'll get there, I promise.
Yeah, that's What else do students and families need to look out for, or what else do they need to prepare for? And how soon should they start preparing in this process?
So traditionally speaking, the state of Massachusetts has a priority deadline of May 1st. Now, because of all these delays and changes this year, the priority deadline is July 1st. So when I say priority deadline, it means fill out your FAFSA before July 1st, because that's what they use as the cutoff date for a lot of state aid, not Reconnect related, but just other state aid. I would say that students and families, too, if you're applying to colleges and you've submitted information to colleges, check your email. Check your email, because all of the schools now are sending things electronically a lot of times. And there'll be students that'll be like, well, I didn't know you were asking for that, but we've sent them like 4 or 5 emails, you know. So check your emails and know who to contact. You know, I always bring business cards or put our contact information when we're visiting high schools or sitting down with families, because it truly is as easy as sending an email to the department or making a phone call to the department. I don't know about all colleges, but most, at least at Bristol, we each have kind of our own individualized emails and phones that you can reach directly to the department to answer your questions. So.
Well, that's very good to know, because individual contact makes a big difference. I think it really helps. I know it helps in the business world if you know who to reach out to, and don't be that person that said, "Oh, I had that card, but I can't find it." You know, like keep it someplace. Keep it with all your files for your FAFSA, that sort of thing. Just don't, because it can make a big difference between something taking a half an hour and or longer, and you get an immediate response, you know.
Right. Right. And the good news is if you lose that business card, if you go to the web page, it's got all of our contact information right there, too. So,
yeah, that's the other thing is websites today are usually very informative and all that info is there. I always tell people on their website, if you don't list who's there, who's working there in whatever capacity, I don't know why you bother having a website, because eventually people are going to need to get to those people. And
absolutely.
If you're trying to hide the people, or if, like, you know, you don't list their phone number, you don't list their email, it's all crazy.
Yeah, we actually have our faces on that webpage. So you could go on there right now and you'll see my face and everybody in my department's face down to our admins. So put the face to the name and contact information too.
That's helpful. That's very helpful. Well, It's been great having you. Is there anything else that you would like to or would you like to close and remind people? FAFSA deadline, you said, is July 1st?
July 1st for the state of Massachusetts, yes. Don't be afraid. We'll help you.
Well, great. It's been great having you, Elena, and we appreciate all the great information. Thank you very much.
Thanks for
being
having
here.
Me. Thank you.